Montana talks here. Live and local. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Montana Talks, uniting the Treasure State, one conversation at a time. Here's your host, Aaron Flint.
Let's do a random start for you here this morning. I need to go in and take some screenshots of some of the latest things that I shared on X. Oftentimes, the stuff that I find on X anymore is some of the best stuff to talk about here, and so I'll share a bunch of random stuff as I'm getting ready for the show here. So let's share a bunch of random stuff as we kick off the show here this morning. First off, my latest post, my latest tweet here. This is from, let's see, it's on Substack. It's called the Montana Chronicles, kind of a new conservative-leaning Substack account. I forget who the author of that is, but some good, interesting reports there. And, of course, it's pretty hard to get conservative-leaning news out of the state capitol in Helena. You got all these liberal-leaning reporters, but who's looking at things from the everyday Montanan standpoint? Here's the headline. House Committee hears a bill wanting to put a citizenship marker on IDs. I think that's a bill by State Senator Teresa Manzella. That makes a lot of sense. That it's kind of like if some of you veterans pull out your driver's license, you can get a veteran's marker on your ID card, on your driver's license, showing that you're a veteran. So that's pretty easy to do. How hard would it be to put citizenship status on these ID cards here in Montana, make it easier for everybody all around? So I like that idea on the face of it. Ted Cruz, you guys heard about Spartacus? Cory Booker, oh my goodness, do we have some clips ready to roll for you later this morning here. Cory Booker, the New Jersey senator, he's big buddies with flip-flop, flat-top, former liberal Senator John Tester of Montana. Cory Booker, he broke the record. He broke the record for the longest filibuster in history. What a joke. What was he filibustering for anyway? Nobody knows. Nobody cares. But Ted Cruz, Texas Senator Ted Cruz, said this. As Cory Booker approaches my 21-hour filibuster record, I am contemplating pulling the fire alarm. Had tipped Jamal Bowman, and then he shared a photo. Remember the former Democrat Congressman Jamal Bowman who pulled the fire alarm at the Capitol to, put a stop to democracy, trying to stop a floor vote on the House, so he pulled the fire alarm. Why wasn't it? Was the guy ever prosecuted? And if not, why not? I mean, man, if you did that, holy cow. Here's another great one. Just shared on X. This comes from the Department of Homeland Security. Thanks to President Trump and Secretary Noem, we have the most secure border in history. Let's look at the numbers on the southern border from March of 2024, and now that it's April, from March of 2025. 137,000 plus total encounters at the southern border under Joe Biden 1 year ago. Now, just over 7,000 under President Donald J. Trump, a 95% decrease in just 1 year. Why wasn't Spartacus mad about that 1 year ago? Why wasn't he mad about the innocent kids being killed by illegal aliens?
Here's a look at your Montana weather for Billings and Bozeman. We'll see areas of light snow across the region today, mixing with and turning to rain showers across the Billings area. Any accumulations less than an inch. High temperature readings from the upper 30s, around 40 in Bozeman, to the upper 40s in Billings. For tonight, rain or snow shower chances turn to snow showers with low temperatures in the mid to upper 20s. That's a look at your Montana weather. On Montana Talks, I'm meteorologist Paul Trombley.
Securing America.
President Trump's nominee to become the next chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, retired Air Force Lieutenant General Dan Kane, appeared before the Senate Armed Services Committee for his confirmation hearing Tuesday, where he made his view on politics and the military very clear.
The nation and the Constitution all require a nonpartisan military.
He also stressed to the committee what he sees as the main role of the Joint Chiefs Chairman.
To provide a range of options for the president to consider and then allow him to select whatever those options work best for him.
General King noted the chairman is not a commander and does not set policy, but promised that when advising the president, he will be very forthcoming.
Candor has gotten me here today, and candor will continue to allow me to do my job moving forward.
General Kane admitted he was surprised to be nominated. Kevin Retzke, Fox News.
Hey, Clay, if there was a summer camp for critical thinking, we'd be the chief counselors. Those jellyheads in June would be intellectual warriors by August. Be a lot of fun, too. Some Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure references thrown in.
This podcast, like a daily dose of that, minus the campfires, archery, and pranking the girls.
The bona fide boot camp for critical thinking. You can get in on it for free at the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts. Just search our names, Clay and Buck. Listen and subscribe.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, let's keep scrolling down the X feed here. Some of the things that have caught my eye in the last hour, at least, if not 24 hours. First, I was talking about, you know, Spartacus Cory Booker, the Democrat senator from New Jersey. Nerd alert. All in good fun. Come on. Stephen Miller made that exact point that I just quickly shared as we went into the first news and weather break here of the morning. Stephen Miller, the deputy chief of staff for President Donald J. Trump, said this about Cory Booker and his little stunt on in the United States Senate. He says, "You were silent when Lakin, Rachel, and Jocelyn were sadistically assaulted and murdered by illegals freed into America by Joe Biden. But when President Trump deports foreign terrorists, you are filled with rage. History's longest filibuster in support of criminal alien killers." Yeah, what is it with these senators who think that if they give like the longest filibuster in history, like that's something to be proud of? I mean, especially when you're standing up for something that's bad, when you're standing up for something that's wrong, right? Like, it's not like, I mean, let's be honest. Does history look kindly upon Strom Thurmond's long filibuster and that filibuster record? No. Should history, or even, you know, contemporary history, which is like the last 24 hours, look kindly upon the Cory Booker of the last 24 hours? No, of course not. My goodness, what are these people thinking? I just think he is so filled with anger and hatred and rage against Donald J. Trump and the Republicans that he just couldn't help himself. Let me, you know what, since I'm on that front, let me play just a little bit of audio so that some of you can get a taste of what this guy sounded like. I mean, Cory Booker at one point sounded like he was about to cry on the floor of the United States Senate. Now, millions of illegal aliens were flooded into this country. You had innocent young women assaulted and murdered by these criminal illegal aliens. And was Booker about to cry then? No, but he's about to cry now.
When is it going to be enough? My voice is inadequate. My efforts today are inadequate to stop what they're trying to do. But we, the people, are powerful. We are strong. We have changed history. If you love your neighbor, if you love this country, show your love.
25 hours makes me a little loopy. Fox News contributor and senior writer for the Washington Examiner, Joe Concha, joins us now. Joe, what did you think about this effort by the senator?
Oh, Carly, my senator, your former senator as a former New Jerseyan, Todd, you as well. This encapsulates both our media and the Democratic Party so perfectly. It is performance art of the cheesiest variety. Cory Booker, of course, now is being heralded on other cable networks and on certain avenues of social media as some sort of resistance hero. But this change is absolutely nothing, except for the fact that the party has never looked and acted so unhinged. And you look at a CNN poll that was out yesterday, the Democratic Party is at 21% approval. I mean, you go onto the street and you talk to five people and one person will say, yeah, I kind of like the job that they're doing. You know, Rachel Zegler and Snow White are more popular at this point than the party. And I think stunts like this, again, that's what we've seen from the Democratic Party since Donald Trump took office again. It's nothing but stunts, resistance, and I don't think it's resonating with voters at this point.
Yeah, and by the way, on that front, speaking of the Democrat Party, first off, last night, you probably heard the Fox News update already, Republicans swept the special elections in Florida, but lost the Supreme Court race in Wisconsin. But you might remember, even though Donald Trump won Wisconsin, Republicans lost the U.S. Senate race in Wisconsin. So, you know, if all those sportsmen, all the gun owners and hunters of Wisconsin had actually shown up to vote, if the Trump supporters had shown up, man, you could have gotten it done. But anyway, back to the Democrats here. CNN, Elon Musk shared this about 17 hours ago. CNN says Democrats in Congress now have a whopping 21% approval rating. Democrats are self-combusting. That's what the Patriot Oasis shared on X. A 21% approval rating for Democrats in Congress. And yet, what is it, Cory Booker thinks little stunts like that are somehow going to help? And then, of course, you've got Jasmine Crockett. What a Crockett. I mean, what a phony. Jasmine Crockett basically, you know, hyperventilating in Congress. Wait till you hear some of the audio I'll share with you later today. She was complaining about the Republicans calling out these biased left-wing district court federal judges. And she was criticizing them for wanting to impeach these lawless judges. But then Congressman Daryl Issa quickly reminded her, you had a bill to impeach a couple of conservative-leaning judges, but oh, now that the Republicans talk about it, it's bad. So we'll get to that. By the way, speaking of Jasmine Crockett, man, I had a great email from Pat Hansen in Big Timber, great guy. Pat sent me an email. God, this was a few days ago now, but I printed it up and I held on to it, and I've just been waiting for the right time to share it because it came in after the show one day, so the timing, I guess, didn't matter too much. But Pat says this, I was wrong. AOC is not the dumbest member of Congress. And then he had Jasmine Crockett's name in the subject line. All right, let's see, lots to talk about here. Man, where do we start? Let's see. Oh, I got one.
This is the Montana Economic Minute.
Few of us like paying taxes, but in the case of income taxes and sales taxes, we do understand one thing, and that is if we make more income or buy more things, we pay more tax. The government tax collections go up and down accordingly. The property tax is different. The government collects the tax like everything else, but the government also tells us what we owe. And few, if any of us, really understand how that calculation happens. But we do understand that our local governments depend on steady revenues to fund services. And the more cynical among us might say that their calculations bend the outcomes of the process to fit their own needs. New research suggests that the cynicism may be justified. Property tax assessments in the U.S. often deviate from market values and tend to adjust in ways that stabilize municipal revenues, according to a newly released study. On average, a 1% change in market valuation produced only a 0.3% change in tax assessments, with reassessments more frequent and more complete when prices are going up. I'm Patrick Barkey.
Brought to you by the University of Montana Bureau of Business and Economic Research.
I'm Chad Pergram with the Speaker's Lobby. What to expect when you're expecting, and a member of the House of Representatives. The House allowed remote voting during the pandemic. Democrats argued it was for social distancing, but proxy voting ended with the pandemic. Lawmakers must vote in person. But what about expectant or new moms? That's why Republican Florida Representative Anna Paulina Luna is trying to go over the head of House Speaker Mike Johnson. She cobbled together enough support to execute a rarely successful parliamentary gambit. The measure would force the House to consider a plan allowing new moms or pregnant members and even new dads to vote from home. But some who were on board before are reversing course. Luna accused GOP leaders of intimidation tactics, saying they warned members they'd yank campaign funds if they don't oppose her plan. She also says Republican leaders promised members a vote on bills important to them. But GOP leaders deny that. Luna is confident she can bypass the Speaker. The Constitution permits the House to establish its own rules, rules which supporters of Luna's measure say were written for men in 1725 and not 2025. With the Speaker's lobby, Chad Pergram, Fox News.
Good morning, everybody. It's time for your Daybreak Ag Report. I'm Russell Nemitz, and thanks for being with us here on the Western Ag Network. Well, cattle producers across the entire country have certainly enjoyed some pretty good returns over the past couple of years, and it looks like the trend may continue for the foreseeable future. Phil Bass, a University of Idaho associate professor of meat sciences, says between the low cost of feed, high prices for fed cattle, and weather that's been pretty cooperative, things have gone well for cattle producers. And he says cattle producers are also enjoying some amazing demand for beef.
Not just domestically, but internationally. And that's great because that's going to continue to pull the product through and pull the value through all the way to the cow-calf operator. The big question now is just going to be how do we sustain the packing base so that when we do eventually start to regrow that herd, we'll have the hook space as we've had. We don't want to see any plants closed down, but I will bet that a number of folks are really nervous about the future.
And he says over on the packer side, they're not recording the kind of profits that they enjoyed just a few years ago.
But my friend John Nalivka at Sterling Marketing in Vail, Oregon, he still is believing that the Packers are turning a profit. And that's a good thing, guys. Remember that if the Packers aren't making any money, we're not going to be able to sustain that business. And raising cattle just kind of becomes a hobby at that point. And so we got to make sure that everybody's still doing well out there.
Bottom line, the fundamental picture has cattle producers in the driver's seat for the foreseeable future. Stay with us. We'll have more ag news right after this. Ranchers, it's time for the Northern Lights annual Red Angus Bull Sale. This Thursday, April 3rd, the Risa family of Opine, Montana will sell 43 yearling Red Angus Bulls, 20 bred commercial heifers, and 40 open commercial heifers at the Glasgow Stockyards. This is a commercial cowman's opportunity to invest in new competitive genetics that'll help you market high-quality Red Angus feeder cattle and replacement females. Sale time is 1 o'clock, also carried live on DV Auctions and Cattle USA. For more information, visit northernlightsredangus.com. The University of Wyoming's Ranching in the West seminar series continues with their next event, Wyoming Ag Ventures, happening at Northwest College in Powell on Thursday, April 3rd. Explore the convergence of farming, ranching, and tourism with innovative approaches to agritourism. This seminar will focus on creating sustainable revenue streams and more. In-person and online attendance options available. Register at uyo.edu/uwag/RMAL. Well, on Tuesday, the National Corn Growers Association told commissioners at the International Trade Commission that corn growers and other farmers would suffer if the U.S. government granted a petition to place anti-dumping and countervailing duties on imports of the 2,4-D herbicide. Now, the testimony comes as ITC weighs whether the petitioner, Corteva AgriScience, was harmed by imports of the herbicide, a finding that would allow for the petition to advance. And finally this morning, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is extending the comment period on its proposed rule to revise the listing of the grizzly bear under the Endangered Species Act. Comments were originally due by March 17th, but the deadline has been extended until May 16th. The agency proposes revising the listing of the species by defining the boundaries of the contiguous U.S. grizzly bear distinct population segment. For the Western Ag Network, I'm Russell Nemitz.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, let's see. I had a story that I wanted to talk about next, but there's a bigger Montana story that I need to get to here first, especially since I think we're going to have a legislative update with the Speaker of the House here, maybe in a few minutes, if not in a few minutes, then later this morning in the hour. Let me quickly thumb through my stack of stuff here. I haven't organized that yet, but let me see. I know I've got a stack of legislative headlines in here that I want to get to. All right, here we go. Let me summarize the big news that took place in the Montana State Senate yesterday. You guys have, of course, we've been covering, you guys have been talking about it. We've been following kind of a, you know, somewhat of a standoff in the Montana State Senate. You've had the former Senate president, Jason Ellsworth, out of Hamilton, voting along with eight other Senate Republicans with the Democrats on committee assignments and key rules and things like that. And so he is the former Senate president, and what's basically been happening is he has been teaming up with eight other Republican state senators to go around and undermine the man who was elected the current Senate president, Matt Regeer, out of Kalispell. And then, of course, this whole ethics controversy got ignited after it was found that Ellsworth had given a contract, a state contract, to a friend of his that appeared to be in violation of state rules, et cetera. And so then, of course, you know, you had a motion by his fellow Republicans to expel Senator Ellsworth from the Senate altogether. That failed. Then there was an effort to censure Senator Ellsworth. That failed. And basically, at the end of the day, the reason why both of those efforts failed is because the Democrats stood with Ellsworth, because he and the, you know, the total nine Republicans had been working with the Democrats. So the Democrats couldn't vote against the guy who had been working with them, right? And then, of course, in just sheer comedy and irony, the Senate Democrats still tried to attack the Republican Party as a whole for the whole Ellsworth ethics controversy, even though they were the ones who voted to not punish him. Well, that has all changed since yesterday. The Montana Senate, this is from the Montana Television Network, the Montana Senate has reached an agreement to punish former Senate President Jason Ellsworth after an ethics investigation. It comes a week after senators initially deadlocked on whether to expel him from the Senate or censure him. On Tuesday, 44 out of 50 senators supported a motion that removes Ellsworth from all his committee assignments and bans him from the Senate floor for life, though he still will be able to vote remotely. Senator Tom McGilvery out of Billings brought the punishment motion. He said he worked with members, leaders from both parties on finding the language that could get the required two-thirds vote. On this Ellsworth story here, yeah, from the Montana Television Network report, I think it was a Jonathan Amberian piece here. So what about the motion to expel Ellsworth from the Senate? So they basically, they've barred him from the floor of the state Senate for life, and they've removed him from committee assignments, but he still will be able to vote on Senate bills remotely, which kind of makes you wonder, well, will he stay in there? Will he stay on the job? Because if you're not on committees and really you can't even go to the floor of the Senate, are you able to fully represent your constituents? So whereas, you know, Ravalli County could put in a replacement there to sit on committees, et cetera. But anyway, the expulsion motion fell well short of the two-thirds vote it needed, failing on a 25-25 vote. 23 Republicans and just two Democrats backed expulsion. But you watch as the Democrats still try to attack Republicans over this, right? While nine Republicans, including Ellsworth, and 16 Democrats opposed it. So I'm assuming, I looked at the names yesterday, I don't have them in front of me right now, that it's still the same nine who have been voting with the Democrats on, you know, committee assignments, key rules changes, et cetera. By the way, what do the nine want at this point? I saw
I saw one of the I saw a comment from Senator Gillespie, who is one of the nine, and he said, "Well, look, these rural hospitals are important for us, and the rural health care is so important." He was commenting on, you know, somebody's Facebook page that was being critical of the nine, and it's like, okay, yeah, but if Medicaid expansion is what got you guys to vote with the rules and the committee assignments with the Democrats, well, you already got Medicaid expansion. It already passed. It's the continuation of that, which never should have gotten, you know, approved in the first place, going back, what, you know, 12, 13 years ago or so now. But it is what it is at this point. That's why you got to stop these things from getting up and running in the first place, because it's even harder to try to change it after the fact. But anyway, so if that's what all this was about, you already got Medicaid expansion. So what else do you want? What's the point at this point? You already got a change up in the committee assignments months ago. You got your Medicaid. So what are you still, like, voting with the Democrats for on all this stuff? I just don't get it. And, of course, you know, nobody just comes out and says it. You have to, like, read through the lines here. You know, it's my goodness. All right, let's see. Normally we'll have the Speaker of the House, Brandon Lear, join us for our weekly legislative update here right after this break. We may push that till later in the morning. We'll see. But as far as right now, it's still on the schedule, so we'll see. If not, we got plenty to talk about. Don't worry.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Yeah, this was the song that came to mind. Tim and Savage. I don't know if you remember this song, or, you know, if you were still banging your head to 80s rock at that point. But this was in the 90s. Third Eye Blind, How's It Going to Be? Do you guys remember that song at all? This was the song that was in the back of my mind here. Is it's like, okay, to the nine Republicans in the Senate. Okay, so now, you know, the ringleader here has been expelled from the floor of the Senate, can vote remotely, but that's about it. And so... And then I saw a comment from one of the nine Republicans that's been voting with the Democrats who said, well, you know, we're standing up for rural hospitals. Okay, if you're referring to Medicaid expansion, because I get it, you all were pressured and some of your campaigns were bankrolled by the pro-Medicaid expansion crowd, even though Obamacare has been destroying rural health care, I get it. They felt desperate, like they need this. It's kind of like, it's like even the hospitals in the bigger towns in Montana. Now, federal government is ripping them off. You and I, if we go pay with cash or with our own private sector insurance, they make more money off of us. The federal government is a freaking cheapskate. They never reimburse these hospitals and doctors what they need to. And yet... the hospital lobby still keeps backing more and more government interference and more government, because they're like, even though they know it's not good, they don't know what else to do at this point other than just keep taking the drug. Keep taking the drug of more government cash. That's all they know how to do at this point, it seems like. Not all. I'll admit that was... But you get the point here. But back to this comment from one of the nine that, well, we're just fighting for rural hospitals. Okay, well, first off, I remember rural hospitals and nursing homes and facilities, they were really worried they were going to go out of business altogether a few years ago. And why was that? Big government mandates, especially the COVID hysteria. And the mask mandates and the vax mandates and stuff like that, they were going to lose workers left and right. And where the heck was the hospital lobby supporting the very policies that was going to put these healthcare, these rural healthcare facilities out of business. It almost like seemed like it was intentional, where they intentionally wanted to put the rural healthcare out of business so that they could just drive everybody to the cities for all of the all of this care. But here's this song. Ooh, I see we got a great caller on the phone lines here too. Maybe he remembers this song because again, what are you fighting for at this point? Is it just personal? Well, if it's just personal, get the freak over it and do the job for the people that elected you. Here's the song I was thinking of here, you know. What are you fighting for? Third Eye Blind, how's it gonna be? Yeah, anyway, what are we fighting for? What are they fighting? You and I know what we're fighting for, but what are they fighting for at this point? Let's see if David Noble has the answer for us. Nice surprise phone call from our friend David Noble on the phone lines right now. David, great to hear from you.
Hey, Aaron, thanks for taking my call. First off, love Third Eye Blind, one of my all-time favorite bands right there, and one of the great songs. And I think you're making a great point about not only how is it going to be going forward with these nine, but what are they fighting for? 100% agree with that. My only thing I was going to add was interesting that they finally came out and basically admitted in public what this is all about, which is Medicaid expansion. My problem is that they never were honest about that up front beforehand, and it takes somebody like me listening to Montana Talks with Aaron Flint during the 6 a.m. hour to hear about a Facebook comment by one of the nine when, interesting. They never mentioned this during their campaigns. They never mentioned this previously during their legislature. And if that's what it's all been about, interesting, we finally hear about it in the Facebook comment. I think the people of Montana, their constituents, deserve to hear that from them publicly and much sooner. And that's it, Aaron. Thanks. Have a great show.
All right, David. Hey, thanks. Good to hear from you. Yeah, I saw the impact of Medicaid expansion. You know, I was up in northeast Montana, and there were some competitive Republican primaries. You know, I was doing these events. Always great to hear from David Noble there. I was up doing these events all across Montana. And so, you know, you're out, you're seeing people, you're seeing things. And we did some events up in Scobie, Plentywood, Glasgow, you know, that whole neck of the woods. And it was before the primary. And, you know, of course, a lot of folks, a lot of the candidates came down and said hi. I saw all the candidates from all the various factions as I was. But I remember one day when I was in Scobie, there was a big meeting that was going on, and it was the local hospital board, or was it the nursing home? I think it was the local hospital board, and they were having this big meeting, and it was this urgent meeting about Medicaid expansion. And so some of the candidates had to go over to that. So I know that the pro-Medicaid expansion lobby had a major influence on some of these primary elections, especially in some of the races where the more moderate candidates ended up beating the more conservative candidates in the primary. But again, so I get it. If you're a lawmaker from that neck of the woods, from northeast Montana, you feel like, look, continuing with Medicaid expansion is what your constituents asked you to do. You feel like that's why you won your primary. Okay, you got it. It's already been there. The people of Montana rejected Medicaid expansion when it was first proposed back in the 2010s time frame. But then the legislature came in and passed it anyway. And it is what it is. And like I've always said, it's always hard to do away with a government program. It's a lot. That's why you have to stop it in its tracks early on. And we've seen what a train wreck Obamacare and everything associated with it has been for healthcare in general. But again, back to this, what are we fighting for point here? So Medicaid expansion, got it. But what about gun rights? What about protecting religious liberties? What about all of these other things that your constituents also expected you to support as a Republican candidate? And like, okay, even if you want to say, look at, you know, They shouldn't have been iced out of some of these folks shouldn't have been iced out of key committees early on. Okay, point taken, you know, Monday morning quarterback it, all you want. But at the end of the day, from everything we've heard, is that was fixed. The committees were then shuffled. Olive branches were extended. And so now what? What are you fighting for? Why don't you come out and tell people what you're still fighting for? And why? Because at this point, it just seems purely personal. It just seems like it's all just a personal deal here. It has nothing to do with the actual issues. All right, let's see. Yeah, it looks like we are going to shift that scheduled time for the legislative update here to later in the morning. Let me see here, but we've got a whole bunch of legislative news that I can get to here this morning. Still organizing my stack of stuff here. House committee hears bill wanting to put a citizenship marker on IDs. That's one of the headlines. Let me just get to that one. The Montana House Judiciary Committee heard Senate Bill 91, which attempts to put an American citizenship marker on IDs. SB 91 says that a Montana driver's license or identification card issued on or after January 1st, 2026 will have an eagle image to signify the person's status as an American citizen. The bill also states that existing resources must be used for the design and to display the citizenship status to implement these changes. SB 91 passed the Montana Senate by a vote of 33-16. And yeah, State Senator Teresa Manzella out of Hamilton is the sponsor of that legislation. And again, go to the Montana Chronicles on Substack. Zachary Schmidt is the author of this piece here. And so it's been fun to see some of his columns, because like I say, you don't get a lot of independent / conservative leaning reporting typically out of the Capitol. It's typically a lot of biased left wing reports. Jonathan M. Baring does a pretty good job overall, though, for the Montana Television Network. I would say that. All right, let's see. Do we got another caller on the phone lines? Oh shoot, we've got. Oh man, I'm not hearing the bumper. Oh, I'm hearing it a little bit. We got the bumper music playing. I got the legislative update coming up right after this from the Montana Family Foundation. Stand by.
Your morning cup of Sean. This is the Sean Hannity Morning Minute.
Those uncovered Social Security Administration files indicating that millions of illegal immigrants were added to the benefits program while Joe was president. And they showed a graph to a crowd in Green Bay, Wisconsin, highlighting over 2 million non-citizens receiving new Social Security numbers in fiscal year 2024. I mean, no wonder why we're headed towards bankruptcy and insolvency with Social Security. It was never put in a lockbox, Medicare, Medicaid. And you have people like Cory Booker claiming that Donald Trump and Elon Musk are plotting and planning and scheming to take away Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid. No, they're not. They have all said repeatedly the only thing they will cut is waste, fraud, and abuse, and nothing else.
The conservative underground meets later today on the Sean Hannity Show.
Only two things in life are certain: death and taxes. Well, now there's a third certainty. If you're with Verizon, AT&T, and T-Mobile, you could be saving a fortune every single month if you switch to my cell phone provider, a veteran-owned company called Pure Talk. Now, that's right, Pure Talk, my sponsor, is cutting the fat from the wireless industry. For just $25 a month, you can get unlimited talk and text, 5 gigs of data on America's most dependable 5G network, and the average family of four saving over $1,000 a year when they switch to Pure Talk. That's real money in your pocket for the exact same service. And with Pure Talk, you have U.S. customer service representatives. They'll make the switch simple, fast, and free and easy. To do it, dial #250, say the keyword save now to make the switch. Do it now. You save an additional 50% off your first month. #250, keyword save now, and start saving today. Pure Talk, wireless by Americans for Americans.
Here's a look at your Montana weather for Billings and Bozeman. We'll see areas of light snow across the region today, mixing with and turning to rain showers across the Billings area. Any accumulations less than an inch. High temperature readings from the upper 30s, around 40 in Bozeman, to the upper 40s in Billings. For tonight, rain or snow shower chances turn to snow showers with low temperatures in the mid to upper 20s. That's a look at your Montana weather. On Montana Talks, I'm meteorologist Paul Frombly.
A radical left-wing federal judge in Missoula, Montana, went on an anti-Trump screed during a sacred ceremony in Missoula. You know which judge we're talking about, Don Malloy, the radical left-wing federal judge who has been a blank check for the Democrat Party and the radical environmental groups. He probably single-handedly has shut down the timber industry in Montana. We've got that full story. It's now been confirmed. Check it out, MontanaTalks.com.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Time now for a legislative update brought to you by the Montana Family Foundation. Here's President of the Montana Family Foundation and former Speaker Pro Tem of the Montana House of Representatives, Jeff Laszlofsky.
Each time the legislature meets, thousands of bill titles are reserved. Of those, roughly 2,000 will actually be drafted and introduced. And of those, only one bill is constitutionally mandated. It's House Bill 2, also known as the state budget. Passing a budget to keep the state operating for the next 2 years is the most important thing the legislature will do during the 90-day session. And today, the budget for the next biennium makes its big debut. When the session began on January 6th, the members of the House Appropriations Committee and Senate Finance Committees figuratively donned their green visors and went to work. Everyone who typically gets a cut of the pie lined up at the feed trough to make their case for increased spending. The members of the Appropriations Committee listened to hours of testimony, did some tweaking, and came up with their first shot at an acceptable budget. Next, it needs the okay of the entire House of Representatives, and that's what happens today at the end of a marathon floor session in the House chamber. All of the House committee hearings are canceled for today, and the members will report directly to the House chamber at 8 a.m. The first thing that freshman members notice is that everything looks different. Lines of tables with computers are occupying the east side of the chamber, and another long table is placed across the front of the chamber below the dais. The tables along the side of the chamber are for the staff of the Legislative Fiscal Division. Their job is to track any amendments to the bill and keep a running tally of where we are with spending. The table at the front of the chamber is for the chairman of each subcommittee and their aide. As each part of the budget is open for debate, the chairman responsible for that section of the budget makes the presentation. There are five sections in total, and each is debated individually over what is typically a 10 or 12 hour nonstop floor session. This is another one of those days that tests a legislator's ability to stay focused and engaged. It's also a day filled with grandstanding and showboating. Since Republicans control the House, it's their responsibility to come up with the votes to pass the bill. Democrats, on the other hand, play the role of loyal opposition, arguing that Republicans are spending too little and introducing amendment after amendment to put more money back into the budget. Republicans will be encouraged by their leadership to sit tight and vote no on all the increased spending. The galleries will be filled with groups demanding more money, mainly members of the teachers' union and disability rights advocates. In the end, after hours of debate and as many as 100 proposed amendments, the bill will look almost exactly as it did when the day began. The vote will take place and the bill will pass from the House to the Senate. The final votes will not take place until late April, and between now and then, everyone who feeds at the public trough will be sitting on pins and needles. For the Montana Family Foundation, this is Jeff Laszlofsky reminding you that this government is your government and your input does make a difference.
Contact Montana Family Foundation at 406-628-1141 or on the web at montanafamily.org.
All right. Thanks to Jeff Laslofsky for another great legislative update. Always appreciate those, especially because, you know, he gives a true legislative update. Yeah, he'll talk about the issues they're working on, especially. But he also tells us behind the scenes what's going on with the process. It's a peek through the windows of the Capitol process. Speaking of windows, boy, have we got a deal for you. This is the biggest sale of the year for YHIC, your home improvement company. This is a once-a-year event, an unbeatable deal. 50% off your window purchase, plus free labor with a minimum of four windows. It's a deal you don't want to miss, and zero down, zero interest, and zero payments for 12 months. That's until 2026 when it comes to the easy financing they've got for you as well. Call 406-948-2836 today to schedule your free in-home consultation. This is their biggest sale of the year. Don't miss out. Let me repeat, 50% off your window purchase, plus free labor, minimum of four windows. 406-948-2836. YHIC.com. You're going to love the difference with your home improvement company. Again, go to YHIC.com to find out how. Tim and Savage first up in the next hour.
This is the Montana Economic Minute.
Few of us like paying taxes, but in the case of income taxes and sales taxes, we do understand one thing. And that is if we make more income or buy more things, we pay more tax. The government tax collections go up and down accordingly. Property tax is different. The government collects the tax like everything else, but the government also tells us what we owe. And few, if any of us, really understand how that calculation happens. But we do understand that our local governments depend on steady revenues to fund services. And the more cynical among us might say that their calculations bend the outcomes of the process to fit their own needs. New research suggests that the cynicism may be justified. Property tax assessments in the U.S. often deviate from market values and tend to adjust in ways that stabilize municipal revenues. According to a newly released study, on average, a 1% change in market valuation produced only a 0.3% change in tax assessments, with reassessments more frequent and more complete when prices are going up. I'm Patrick Barkin.
Brought to you by the University of Montana Bureau of Business and Economic Research.